This is Jazz of Enchantment, a radio series spotlighting just some of the talented jazz players with ties to New Mexico. I'm Paul Ingles. There are other fine clarinetists around, wrote one London jazz critic, but Kenny DeVerne is the master jazz musician on this instrument and has been for a quarter century and more. As a young man in the mid-1950s, DeVerne played with the greats like Jack Teagarden, Phil Napoleon, Pee Wee Irwin, and the Dukes of Dixieland. He graduated to a level of greatness himself as the soprano sax playing anchor of what some call one of the most important jazz groups of the 1970s, Soprano Summit, with Bob Wilbur. DeVerne moved to New Mexico in 2002 and spoke recently with Mark Weber about that moment in his Long Island, New York childhood home when his jazz life seemed to begin.
Somewhere around the age of 11 or 12, I heard this squeaking, squawking, growling music thing on the radio, and it turned out to be Pee Wee Russell playing with Muggsy Spanier on a tune called Memphis Blues by W.C. Handy. That's it. But I'll be damned. I heard this, I said, that's very nice and all that, but it was when Pee Wee comes in, that's when I went, I stood transfixed in front of the icebox. We didn't have refrigerators then, the icebox, staring at it, on the radio on top of it. There it is, that's it.
Could you tell it was a clarinet when you first heard it?
No, I didn't know what the hell it was. All I know, I just said, I heard this. I said, I want to dedicate my life to this. That's it.
So what was it about that sound that grabbed you so much?
It was filthy. it was the way I felt about things. I mean, it was there was something very raw and something that in me that wanted out, that would come out like that.
And then after that, after you heard Pee Wee, what was your life like?
I went to high school, okay? So I'm in high school, and one of my classmates is Joe Grosso's son, who happened to be the drummer on that record, and we form a little Dixieland band in school, see? I went to Bobby's house to eat lunch, and, you know, from 12 to 1, because the high school wasn't far away, Newtown High in Elmhurst, Queens, and there was Joe Grosso just getting up out of bed at 12 noon. He'd worked till 4 in the morning, probably didn't get to bed till about 6 or 7. And he comes out in his silk robe and a cigarette holder, you know, a long cigarette holder. And what do you say, kids? How you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And, of course, he was working with Bobby Hackett at Lou Terassi's, which was on 47th, I believe, off of 8th. But he would take us down to the original Eddie Condon's on West 3rd Street and take us in the back way. And we'd be able to hear these guys like Wild Bill Davison and Pee Wee and Eddie Condon and all these wonderful players that were there at that time, Lou McGarry, Bud Freeman. I mean, it was just a thrill to hear these guys in person. They were my heroes. Plain and simple. The whole Condon gang, which I'm very proud to say I became a member of, even if it was in the latter part of his life, was to me a highlight. It's the kind of music I liked. And I've stayed with it.
How did you wind up in Jack Teagarden's band at age 19 and making records with him?
The lead alto player on Ralph Flanagan's band, we were at the Hotel New Yorker, Joe Lenza, one night out of the blue just said to me, would you like to go with Jack Teagarden? And I said, would I? So I said, yeah, but what are you talking about? He said, well, call Ray Baduke at the President Hotel at midnight tonight, because they're working at Frank Daly's Meadowbrook across the river, you know, New Jersey. So when midnight came, I ran to the phone, you know, put in my nickel, Ray answered the phone, and I said, yeah, come on out tomorrow, which was a Sunday. We're having a matinee, and, you know, you could sit in with the band and with Jack, and we'll see how things go. Meet us at the President Hotel at noon. So I went out and played one number, a couple of numbers, and nobody said anything to me. Not a word, you know.
Jack wasn't a big talker anyway.
No, he wasn't. That's for sure. But when the set was over, everybody went their own separate way, probably to the bar. And then I noticed Jack was up in the bleachers, you know, balcony bleachers up there, and talking with his wife, Addie. So I walked over to Jack, and I said, well, what's happening, Jack? He said, well, you're hired, Ken. He said, where you been all my life? And that was it. I mean, I was in, woo, heaven.
But he didn't talk like that. How do his Texas accent?
Well, he talked, well, where you been all my life, Kenny? You know, sure, be good to have you aboard. Yes, sir.
So, Kenny, you've brought in this recording that you made in 1954 with Jack Teagarden.
Right.
Tell us about it. What are we going to hear?
It depends what you want to hear. If you want to hear him sing and me play the clarinet in back of him, that's Misery in the Blues, which is originally the title, I think, of the album.
Now there's nothing but blues in the morning, misery in the evening. Wake up sobbing like a child of two. Wish I'd never met you. Bet the devil gets you. Then you'll know the heartaches of a fool, full of misery and the blues.
Misery and Blues has a very nice feel about it, and I just played a little background lead, you know.
Let's talk about your music for a while.
Yes.
What is your music? How would you describe it to a Martian or to somebody from Poughkeepsie?
I can't describe my music. I'd rather not. I mean, if you have to describe it, you can't play it. I just think music is good music and bad music. And we are living in a world of bad music right now. I think the majority of the music that's being perpetrated, foisted upon the American public, and especially its children, is a disgrace and it's disgusting. And I think it's doing a lot of damage that's irreparable because they will never know what real music sounded like. I prefer song forms, okay? I prefer tunes that were written in the teens, the 1900s, the 20s, 30s, 40s. And those are the tunes that I use for my points of reference and departure. Gershwin, Berlin, people like that, Harold Arlen. I mean, those are the people who wrote songs that people were able to sing, whistle, they knew the words. I mean,
dance. You like to play music that people could...
The dance to, exactly right.
Thank you.
thinking about when you are soloing? Are you working on rhythmic devices?
I'm working on nothing. All I'm trying to do is get to my subconscious faster as I can, just to get away from myself. And then I don't know what happens. Whatever happens, happens.
Seriously?
Seriously. I plan nothing. I'm a creature of what goes on around me and what's in, you know, like what I have to play, whom I have to play off of, with, etc. And what my audience is about. That determines my performance. And it doesn't matter if I'm playing Three Blind Mice or Lady Be Good. You know, the thing that's going to happen, if it does happen, is that I've stepped out of myself and I'm watching myself dance with whatever's going on.
Are you in a trance when you're like that?
I think so. Yeah, I think there's a trance-like state. Mm-hmm.
Are you having telepathy with the other musicians?
There is a form of that. Mm-hmm.
And or not having telepathy?
That's a lot of the times, too. There's a time of where there's a lack of telepathy that I become outraged. You know, I become actually angry, like... I'll mumble or grumble or whatever, you know, and start swearing or something, you know, get very scatological.
You've been working with the drummer Tony DiNicola for a long time. What is that telepathy like?
It's like a surfer rolling on a wonderfully long wave, you know, that he knows is going to just take him home.
You being the surfer.
Yeah.
Is Tony tuned into you, or are you tuned?
We're tuned into each other. Yeah. In other words, he'll listen to what I'm doing, and I'll listen to what he's doing, and he'll vary it on me sometimes. I mean, sometimes he varies it on me all the time. It makes me change gears a lot of times, which is fine because I trust him.
Aha. Uh-huh.
See, that's the key word, I think, trust. Yeah. You got to trust everybody around you, and that's where the telepathy comes in. Just an eyebrow raise, just a finger point, you know, quick finger pointing. And everybody knows exactly where they're going at that point. And that may not happen until maybe the last bar of a particular chorus or something. But the guys are there, they're ready, they're right there, boom.
Has it always been like that for you?
No, of course not. You work for this. You really have to. If it happened once a year when I was a kid, just that one time would keep me practicing for the rest of the year. And then soon, it might happen twice a year. And then maybe three times a year. And soon, my goodness gracious, you look for it around the corner at every time. You think you're all out of the case. And this is, of course, an absurdity. It will not happen all the time, but you get to a certain kind of professional expertise, you know, you get to that point where you can emulate it. But it's better when you're really feeling it, because it really is, it's a dance that you don't even want to describe to anybody. That's how wonderful it is. That's what's kept your music for 50-some-odd years, through thick and thin. You know, when I say thick and thin, we've had some very, very lean times.
We're talking to Kenny DeVern, clarinet maestro. When was the first Dick Gibson Colorado jazz party?
Well, I think it started actually in Vail. He started somewhere around 1969 with a very small group, not a large group of people, I think. But the one that I went to...
Was that 1972 we're talking about?
Yeah.
So the very first time you went there was also the very first time you and Bob Wilbur got thrown together.
This is true.
And
yeah,
Soprano Summit was sort of brought you to a new level of notoriety.
This is true. Well, the Gibson party was the most prestigious party there was, period. He had the most prestigious musicians. I mean, from Benny Carter... to Phil Woods, to Trummy Young to Billy Butterfield.
You brought the house down with the Mooch.
Well, yes. What happened was Dick Gibson, kind of a big, blustery kind of guy. You know, now he's from Mobile, Alabama.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Now, Kenny, Bob, I want you two boys to get together and do something. So, but I'd only known Bob Wilbur, you know, just to say hello. Maybe we played occasionally together in New York City, but basically he did his thing and I was doing my thing. And so we just talked about what do you want to do. He says, well, I suggested The Mooch by Duke Ellington. And he said, well, which version, the Bechet version or the Ellington version? So I said, well, let's do the Bechet version because Ellington thought it was better than his own. Yeah, so he knew that one too. So Bob and I hit it off right away simply because we had the same, we came out of the same background, but we had different approach to the same music. Well, fortunately, that set, the last set, after all these people have been listening to, 650 people have been listening to, like 4 days, you know, two sessions a day from 11 in the morning to 2 o'clock in the morning, we get up there. And like I said, fortunately, we had Dick Hyman on the piano, Bucky Pizzarelli on guitar, Milt Hinton or George DeVivier on bass, and Bobby Rosengarten on the drums. Well, Bobby used to say, well, my mother used to take me to Chicago from Elgin, Illinois, hear Duke Ellington play that very tune, so I know what to do. You know, boom, ding, ding. Well, the drums start doing the tom-tom thing, and we come roaring in on the Mooch, and we got finished. 650 people rose to their feet and cheered for 10 minutes. Cheered. Tears came to my eyes because I'd never witnessed anything as dynamic and explosive, you know, to any performance I'd ever had up to that point, you know. And that's when they suggested we form a group and record it, which we did.
So the group lasted just a couple of years as Soprano Summit, and then ever since you've made another dozen records as Soprano, or no, as Summit Reunion.
Well, that was a result of Bob Wilbur suggesting, because I'd given up the Soprano in 1978 when the group disintegrated. He said, well, we can't call it Soprano Summit because you're not playing Soprano anymore, Bob would say. You know, so I said, well, what do you think? He said, well, let's call it Summit Reunion then. So we did everything on the cuff that way.
So, Kenny, we're going to listen to Palestina?
Yeah. The tune I suggested that we record with this particular group simply because it has a certain flair.
Kenny, you've made a recent record, live at the Albuquerque's own Outpost Performance Space, which is actually the title of the CD on Arbor's Records.
Yes.
And we're going to listen to Careless Love. Tell us about Careless Love. That's like an ancient, for jazz, it's like an 1895 song.
It's older than that. It's one of the oldest blueses known. Nobody knows who wrote it, but W.C. Handy copped it as his own. He patented it sometime around 1910 or something, and he got all the credit for it. But there's a lot of blues. I mean, how do you patent the blues, you know, I ask you. ¶¶
clarinet master Kenny DeVern, interviewed by Mark Weber. To learn more about Kenny DeVern and to hear much more from our interview session, visit our website, newmexicojazz.org. That's newmexicojazz.org for more profiles of jazz musicians with New Mexico ties. The Jazz of Enchantment radio series is engineered by Nola Daves Moses with help from Carol Boss. Web design and photography by Genevieve Russell. Support for the series comes from the New Mexico Humanities Council, the City of Albuquerque's Urban Enhancement Trust Fund, KUNM, and Good Radio Shows, Incorporated. I'm Paul Ingalls.